John Barkley comes up to receive the trophy. This, for the Scarlets fans, is simply great to watch. They were outplayed in the first half by a Tudor side that picked and win. The 1872 Cup back in Edinburgh hands. They've beaten Glasgow.
The first team in 17 attempts to come to Dublin and get a win. How good is that for you?
Oh, it's great.
All I'm getting at the moment are players shouting, knock on, offside, tackle out the ball. We're in the wrong sport for that.
The Zeebo special gets it wide to Earls. And Earls from here means only one thing.
Best stadium I've ever played in, the best atmosphere, the best supporters. Hopefully one day I'll be back.
Should of course apologise to any Munster fans listening. They'll have something to say about whether Leinster are going to be in the final as the Scarlets come again. Oh, brilliant offload. It's Brady with a stroll in under the sticks.
Oh, look, it's been a roller coaster here all my life. 47-10. Jesus, I thought I was in dreamland when we won the Pro 12. Phenomenal, phenomenal.
So, welcome back to the Outside Centres. This week we're going to be looking at some of the Pro 14 Week 4 Roundup, looking at some of the interesting games, interesting results that we saw this week. I think now we'll just crack on with the Southern Kings versus Glasgow.
Yeah, okay. Not much to say about this.
I think it caught everyone off guard.
It did. I suppose the theme of the week is home advantage. The theme of the week is how all the home teams, well, all apart from one, which you'll get to, did particularly well and won their games. And to do that, I suppose, you have to upset people's expectations. And Southern Kings did that when they beat Glasgow. And I'm just quoting from the London Times. The London Times, who described Glasgow's performance as shambolic, and to compare them to headless chickens was disrespectful to headless chickens. The Kings went ahead very quickly. They went up to 29-0 very, very quickly.
And then even went as far as to go 31-0 up.
Yeah.
After around the 50-minute mark.
Yeah, around then. And then was the yellow card, of course, that saved Glasgow. Well, put them on the scoreline.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I wouldn't want anybody to be confused by that scoreline. They were well beaten, 38-28.
Oh, 30. It was weird even seeing them at the end of that game still pushing for tries. I mean, once you consider a team then that much, it's odd to see them trying to score tries in the 80th minute.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. They had their bonus point at that point.
They got
anyway.
It, yeah.
So I suppose it was just fighting for a bit of dignity, I suppose. David Rennie in an interview said it was the worst performance on his watch. Now, he did say that they bossed in terms of territory and possession. And actually, when you look at the stats, that was true. They had most of the territory, they had most of the possession, but their defence was terrible.
I think, weirdly, one of the things that I saw from watching the game was that Kings beat Glasgow out wide, which, I mean, if you look at Scottish rugby, typically they're quite free-flowing, and that was something that particularly caught me off guard. I mean, as they say, there's no substitute for speed, so.
Well, I mean, I suppose it's the wingers who are having the best time on Instagram,
exactly.
I suppose.
Yeah.
This is it, isn't it? Showing off the beach bods on an actual beach, which you don't get much of a chance to do in Scotland at this time of year.
But it's quite the turnaround from what Glasgow had last week. I think the Cheetahs are still having a bit of a hangover from that game. I mean, after all, we were talking about home field, home advantage. Ulster didn't roll over and didn't let them have home field advantage, did they?
Well, it's interestingly that Glasgow were unbeaten coming into this round, and now obviously they're beaten by Southern Kings. And after this round, now Ulster remained the unbeaten side. Now they drew, of course, with Cheetahs, and I suppose the point about Cheetahs is that they're at home, so we would expect there would have been a home advantage. Now, Ulster are playing quite well, but like Cheetah's home advantage is quite distinct because their stadium in Bloemfontein is at 1,389 metres, if you want to be precise. So even in the game when they were ahead up to the very end. And
Spate scored the try.
And then Burns converted to make it 39-39. You wouldn't expect that to happen because you would have thought that people would have faded at that point, that the high altitudes basically would tell.
And I mean, as I said before, so far Ulster season has gone through the boot of John Cooney. I mean, three of the first four games of them have ended, obviously Cooney wasn't in this game, but three of the four games so far this season for Ulster have ended with a kick at the stroke of full time.
They leave it to the last, all right, yeah.
It's a bit exciting, but I mean,
his replacement, Shannon got the two tries. There were assists from Darren Cave, and actually to look at the tries, When I saw them, I actually thought I was looking at a replay. They were exactly the same sort of format, just breaks through the centre's left with one man to beat, then passes on to the scrum half. So he did quite well, Shannon, as a replacement to Cooney. So maybe John Cooney isn't sleeping well tonight. Who knows?
Well, I think as well, if you look at the statistics, I know we were talking about statistics before, but I think there were 35 broken tackles in that game. I mean, is this by virtue of being in the Southern Hemisphere that people forget how to tackle and it's much more free-flowing rugby? I mean, it's just, it beggars belief how many missed tackles were in that game. And you could even tell, even in the, even if briefly going back to the Kings Glasgow game, there are so many broken tackles, and that's kind of close to the try line. It seemed people were just bashing over because that seemed the most direct line and the easiest way to get over, because, oh, it's only one person that missed tackle you.
Well, is it mainly Ulster, a bit like Glasgow, just enjoying Instagram too much, just enjoying being South Africa too much, having too much of a good time? I mean, the only other thing to say there that I wanted to say was just that Billy Burns was taking the kicks, so obviously Cooney does usually. He seemed to do quite well and held his head to level it at the end, so fair play to him. It looks good as a replacement, although I think I saw that Cooney's expecting an early return. He's not expecting to be out for too long.
Yeah, I saw his outrage on Instagram there with the having to wear a scrum cap the rest of the season. I think with that many stitches in your head, play it safe.
Yeah, well,
play
if that's all safe. That happens, sure, you'd be delighted with himself.
Luckily. But yeah, no, I think moving on then, some of the other results that kind of stood out to me, kind of going along with the idea of the home field advantage being important, after a very, very shaky start, Cardiff managed to pull up quite the upset. And it wasn't exactly a Munster team that were sitting down and taking it. It was, you had the big guns coming out for Munster.
Yeah, but there was a lot of penalties. I mean, they made a lot of mistakes. There was something going on there. I mean, the episode is mainly about home advantage versus when it comes in competitions. And I suppose Cardiff are one of the great examples of how home advantage will upset what the bookies' odds might have been. Now, listen, rugby is famous for the fact that home advantage is very strong, so it's not a big shock. No one's writing headlines that Cardiff beat Munster at home. But
well, I mean, Cardiff did start off the season like without a win.
Yes, they have not been doing
games.
Well.
I mean, losing to Zebre as well. I think that was, they capitulated. So finally, I think coming back, and what was interesting about this game in comparison to the other upsets that we would have seen with the Kings, it was definitely a case that Cardiff kept the points ticking over. They didn't run off to the lead early and then hold on to it. Yeah, so I mean, I think it was interesting seeing how Anscombe came back in this week and really kind of bossed the show. I think that was something that really stood out to me. And once again, tackling wasn't fantastic. But I suppose at the same time, you have
Thomas Williams, this new scrum half, they have scored 2 tries. Now, I only started in the Welsh squad this year. Around Six Nations, I think he has only had 2 starts. 23-year-old, an academy player from Cardiff, so sort of homegrown talent. I mean, the other big names who featured in the game for Cardiff were Kiwis, people like Willis. Oh, I can't even pronounce it, Dan. Hodo?
Hodor?
And Gareth Anscombe himself is actually originally a Kiwi too.
Yeah.
He's certainly a name to look out for. He'll be involved in this mix come Six Nations and Autumn International Time for Wales as well.
Looking at that 10 merry-go-round that's going on in Wales at the moment between all those guys there. Yeah, no.
And so to move on then from the those guys in red, Munster, who were
to the boys in blue.
Let's move on to the other. Let's move on to the other boys in red, the Scarlets.
Oh yeah.
I mean, talking about upsets. I mean, we had Munster would have expected, all things being equal. Obviously, a team expects that they're going to lose away from time to time, or quite regularly, in fact, in rugby. But all things being equal, Munster would have expected to win that game, and Scarlets would have expected to beat Connacht, and it definitely was not to be.
Yeah, I mean, is it too early for? It probably is too early for Ireland to call themselves the New Zealand of the Northern Hemisphere when not our strongest side is still beating the second, some would say the second best team in the league.
Well, yeah, I suppose the interesting question is, are they now? They're probably not saying that about themselves right now.
No, true. I mean, they were probably quite happy when they got the result against Leinster at home. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to be a top team, you need to travel. So I think Connacht played very well. I think there was a lot of standout performances in there. I know there was a on the Scarlet side of the ball, I know Johnny McNichol.
Johnny McNichol, yeah.
Yeah, he had quite a good game. Definitely was a performance that stood out to me. But on
former Crusader, he's played for Crusaders.
True. Well, he was in the wider squad, but yeah. Mm. But I think Connacht definitely had some standard performances. Farrell in the centre and Bundiaki really had a strong pairing. I mean, some of the tries.
It was his first start, of course, yeah.
Yeah, but when Aki set up some nice tries and Farrell underneath the post, it was definitely, you could see the typical Andy Friend free-flowing running rugby that was coming.
Yes.
That was definitely on show. And I think when Ulton Delan came back on as well, came off the bench, he definitely made some impacts there, hard running up the middle again. So kind of some vintage Ulton Delan. But
yeah, I suppose one of the first things we said, in one of the first episodes of the show is, you know, why the hell hasn't Connacht done well since they won in 2016. It's the same team, effectively.
Yeah.
You know, take away Henshaw and Lamb, is it not effectively the same team? And I suppose I have to put my hand up and say that, like, two of those guys who scored there at the weekend, Tom Farrell, the centre, and Keane Keller, the winger, they both joined in 2016. So these are new talents.
Yeah,
these guys weren't involved in the winning the winning campaign in 2016, and so it is an evolving side, and they are using players with a lot of flair. Now I'm surprised Dan hasn't immediately interrupted to say, yes, these players with a lot of flair come from the Leinster Academy.
I was holding myself back.
But it's true, the truth hurts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose that even Munster and Ulster are benefiting from the ex-Leinster Academy players now, but I think it is just something that once you can breed a certain type of player and really develop that, I think it's something that for the nation will be good. You know,
I suppose that gives you a chance. Listen, we'll just give you the chance to just very briefly talk about the Leinster Edinburgh game, because because of all the games, that was actually the one that perhaps followed suit the most. Form book. Yeah, I mean, the game perhaps didn't go all of Leinster's way, but the scoreboard was emphatic.
Yeah, I think this was one of the results that Leinster were always in control, but unlike last week against the Dragons, there was definitely much more of a slow release Leinster squad. I mean, there was no running off to an immediate lead, or all of a sudden at the tail end of the game the floodgates open. I think it was much more consistent throughout. I think there was definitely some things that Leinster needed to take away and work on. But as well, I think Edinburgh put in a much stronger performance than one would have anticipated. They wouldn't have had...
There aren't very many household names in the Edinburgh squad.
Yeah, and even Blair Kinghorn wasn't even starting. He didn't even play. Latching on to
okay,
the...
Not a household name, but one of the up-and-comers.
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
But I just thought that was... I was kind of surprised that Leinster really putting out quite a strong squad, and they didn't dominate in the same way one would have expected. But I have to give credit to Edinburgh. I mean, coming off the result that they had last week, yeah, they won, but it was 17-10 against Connacht the previous week, and it had been 17-0. So I think it's both a sign that maybe Connacht are stronger than we had thought that they were.
And they've just beaten Scarlets. I mean, they're good.
Exactly. And then Edinburgh, I suppose, are strong, and maybe the RDS, and as we're trying to say in this podcast, the home advantage at the moment is proving to be quite the advantage.
Okay, so just to move on to talk about this idea of home advantage, there was only a couple of other games I think we've missed out. The Zebre game, is it?
Zebre, Dragons, in which it was a home game, Dragons won.
Yeah.
And then Ospreys versus Benetton, and as you'd expect, Ospreys won.
Yeah, and two losses there for the Italians on the road. Probably improved performance compared to what the competition is used to seeing, but still not necessarily winning away from home each game, obviously. So,
Yeah.
So, I mean, I suppose when you're talking about stadiums there, it's interesting. We want to have this kind of broader kind of look at home advantage because it's very emphatically a causal factor in results in rugby. Now, there are the factors that everybody kind of understands, and we're looking at those games, we can kind of pinpoint a few of them. So, like, there's the four main factors would be crowds, bias, familiarity, and travel. This is what psychologists say. So, with travel, you've got the problem, obviously, we saw it with Glasgow going to South Africa.
Yeah, it's disruption.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we're kind of having a go with the players there for updating their Instagram accounts. I mean, worse feels us for even seeing them,
yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah.
But there is last year Cardiff had a terrible experience with the 48-hour plane ride to South Africa,
missing a flight, and then all of a sudden they're less than 24 hours before their first kickoff. They're there, and I mean that's inevitably going. And in all fairness to them, they nearly won.
Yeah,
nearly won that time. But no, yeah, I mean inevitably,
it's disruptive. It's highly disruptive,
and especially as we touched on before, especially with the South African teams, it's going to be difficult. But
yeah.
But in general, home field advantage is huge. You can see it in other sports as well.
Then the other one, a familiarity example you could use there is in terms of Connacht. I mean, Jack Carty has been playing. Jack Carty never played. I mean, talking about the other players playing for the Leinster Academy, Jack Carty is from either Roscommon or Athlone. He's from the same sort of part of the world as Robbie Henshaw. They don't really know his part. I'm sure he knows where he's from. I'm sure Robbie Henshaw knows where he's from. But the rest of us don't. But he basically got his start with Connacht and has always been with Connacht. So that familiarity of knowing the stadium, and I suppose knowing how the winds even work in the sports ground.
Does anyone
as
know?
Number 10. Yeah, well, yeah, I suppose the fact that you don't know is what you know, I suppose, which gives you the advantage. Then you've got crowd size. Now, crowd size is kind of an interesting one, because if you look at those games in South Africa, you have these massive stadiums.
Yeah, I mean, even the Kings changed to a smaller stadium this week.
Oh, did they? Oh, wow, that didn't come across.
Yeah, and it was still empty.
Yeah,
it was not fantastic. I mean, okay, the Rugby Championship is, I think, it's coming to its culmination soon now, but I mean, still, you'd expect if there's rugby on, if it's a rugby nation, there should be people at the game.
No, absolutely, absolutely. And one of the interesting things, now, we're just going to have a look at a couple of psychology studies, and one of the things that came up in terms of football research. Now, not enough is done in terms of, you and I would say, not enough is done in terms of psychology research when it comes to rugby, but, and perhaps there isn't even enough done in terms of sport. But one study that was done is that for football, they discovered that an increased crowd size has an impact on the result, gives you home advantage up to a max of 20,000 people. So beyond 20,000, it actually has no more effect. So 20,000 to a player is considered a big enough amount of people to intimidate you. You actually can't be intimidated any more than that. But another thing that psychologists are always fixating on, which I suppose Edinburgh, when they have their games in Murrayfield and Southern Kings and Cheetahs should listen to, is that crowd size does have an impact on your home advantage, but it's the density that's really important. There has to be a wall of sound somewhere.
There has
to be this kind of connection of people around one sort of chant or one idea. I mean, you could probably spread quite a few people around one of those South African stadiums, and it still have no atmosphere.
Exactly. As we said last week, the images of the Ulster Kings game is quite sparse.
Yeah, yeah. And so what I just want to sort of very quickly have a look at here, is just one study that was done to try to figure out what causes home advantage, physiologically, what causes home advantage in rugby games. And what was discovered is that basically the home team has higher cortisol and higher testosterone levels than their opponents. So when you arrive in the stadium of your opponent, the home team, they are really, really pumped. And it's not the media, it's not the crowd, it's actually a medical condition, effectively. Well, it can be, a psychologist can gauge it. They take saliva samples and check your testosterone and your cortisol, and they can say that, oh wow, this guy's testosterone has spiked now, that ahead of the away guy. So the away guy's testosterone isn't as high as the home guy's. So what's interesting, I suppose, about that is that beyond these other factors that people talk about, there is actually that physiological response.
But you were saying as well, so in terms of, is this a whole team thing? Is this, oh, the person's grown up here, so it feels like you're playing for your home team as really someone coming into your back garden? Or Is it across the board? Is it everyone?
Well, yeah, okay. So two interesting kind of results they found was, first, that it is actually only has impact on those people selected to start.
Okay.
So if you put up the team sheet on a Thursday and the psychologist comes along and checks the saliva of the team on the Friday, they'll find that everybody in the starters list, their testosterone has spiked, but the people who are actually on the bench, it has actually had no impact. Now, psychologists put that down to disappointment, that the people are sitting back saying, oh, wow, I can't believe, their system becomes a little suppressed because they can't believe that they weren't picked.
Yeah.
Now, I think we were also saying that that is probably not going to be the case, and this is pure speculation, it's probably not going to be the case in the higher levels of the game.
No, I mean, even if you put Johnny Sexton on the bench, I mean, I think Johnny Sexton has a certain level of preparedness for a game, regardless of if he's starting or not. I suppose you could point to the summer tour and say, well, maybe that's not the case, because when he came off the bench in the first test, that didn't go particularly well. I think it could have been something to do with Johnny maybe overplaying the ball or something like that and trying to take too much of a control of the game when he came on. But I suppose, yeah, no, like there could be players who are on the fringe of starting, and then they get disappointed and they're let down and all that goes with it.
I just wanted to interject here that this home versus away study is by a psychology team called Cunniff et al. If you wanted to stick that into Google, okay. It is there. This isn't just me spouting. I might be spouting nonsense, but it's not my nonsense. Yeah, yeah. It's somebody else's nonsense. One of the other interesting things it's kind of a sideways point, but just for those people who kind of question the existence of home bias, is that they discovered, psychologists discovered in their studies that in the Southern Hemisphere, the home team has a 6.7 or 6.27 point advantage built in. So it doesn't matter how good the home team is, or it doesn't actually matter how good the away team is, that statistically over a season, the home team has a 7 point advantage than they ordinarily would have.
And on top of this, it's also taken into world rankings as well. I mean, when you're looking at, say, New Zealand, when they're in the rugby championship, I think it's very hard for New Zealand to actually gain any world ranking points, especially at the moment with the way the rankings are, because they are so far ahead in terms of the world rankings points. And also, when you're at home, it's even more difficult to increase that. So that's why New Zealand, you would see Ireland getting closer and closer to New Zealand in the world rankings. But essentially, if New Zealand were to get any points from playing home games, they need to be playing Ireland all the time. They don't get any anymore in the rugby championship. So that's quite an interesting factor, that it is built into rugby international statistics. But it's obviously, that doesn't have much of a bearing.
Yeah, well, I suppose home advantage kind of exists. I suppose the point is that it exists across the spectrum in all sports. And I suppose it's just what's interesting is because it's such a muscular, I suppose, sport, the fact that these testosterone levels can actually be quantifiable, that you can say that the people are actually having a physiological reaction, that's kind of interesting. But I suppose one of the other interesting things in terms of there's a physiological reaction. Then we started off by going through the factors that people know, you know, like travel, familiarity, the crowd size. But then there's also the bias of the crowd leading to decisions being made. So
I mean,
rugby suffers from this hugely, of course, because the TMO.
Yeah, but that's
we were just at a game there at the weekend where the crowd bayed until the ref went to the TMO.
That's very true. And even as Gerry Thornley said in the Irish Times today in an article, he said if a referee is to go against the home crowd, he better make sure he still has his car running before he leaves the game.
Yeah, I think that's a bit unfair. I think many referees do go against the home crowd.
No, but at the same time, I suppose part of it is going to be if the sides are close. And I think you'd been talking earlier about in soccer how the referee is more likely to give a foul against an away team if the away team's the favourite.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So that's interesting. I suppose soccer, okay, the fans.
You always get that feeling watching rugby too, though.
Well, the fans are a bit different in soccer too, though. As well.
True.
I think an interesting point of view to take is, okay, soccer refs in general are going to be a certain type. Is it fair to say then that there's going to potentially be a Nigel Owens factor or a Wayne Barnes factor when it comes to rugby? Because we all know how much Nigel likes to be reffing big games.
So you're saying that another sign of home advantage is if you screw up enough that only a spectacular decision can save you.
Exactly.
Maybe Nigel Owens will provide you with that spectacular decision.
Well, that would suit Connacht if Leinster were going to be playing.
Yes, I suppose this is, we were just talking there about, nice segue, Dan.
Exactly.
Your cortisol levels are obviously high this evening. Yeah, so that was a nice segue Dan was giving there from how if the away team is more likely to be penalised if their favourite's going into it, how is that now going to impact? We use that lens to look at the weekend fixtures. Now, the thing about the weekend fixtures, though, is that we don't have derbies across the board. We only have derbies in Ireland, don't we?
It's great.
Yeah, well, it's great for us. And I suppose the others are going to be staggered. I think the weekend after are more derbies, of course.
Yeah, well, as happens in Wales every year, they have Judgment Day. So you have the whole, there's derby games that go on all day, and it's based in Millennium Stadium. I'm pretty sure they're doing it again this year. They've done it the last few years. It's proved to be quite successful. But I think, yeah, so that this weekend is just going to be the...
Yeah, this weekend is just Connacht, Leinster, and therefore Ulster, Munster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing about this, so this is kind of, now, having given you the psychology study, now we're going to give you the... Well, I'm going to give you the breakdown of why these games are happening. So when the new format of the Pro 14 was introduced... There was, now see, I know this is true because I googled an article on this and discovered that I had written the article on this. So if you google the derby system in the new Pro 14 structure, you will see an article by me.
So are you saying
you're know the, it's authoritative?
You're the world expert on the derby system in the Pro 14.
Absolutely. I'm also the only person who cares, but I'm I'm going to share it with you. The old system, you had a derby system where everybody from the same country played each other twice, which, so if you're Leinster, you played Munster twice.
But well, this was the before the conference systems that were in the Pro 14.
Exactly.
So it's still the Pro 12. Yeah.
Yeah, when it was the Pro 12. So then when it converted back over, it led to a disparity in the amount of games that people had to play because you had this conference system. So at the minute, only two Welsh teams are in the same conference.
Yeah.
They will only play each other twice because by the conference rules, you actually play people in the other conference only once. But that wouldn't do for bums on seats, for money, for an interest, and for just the sport generally.
I mean, it's the fact that there could only be one Leinster-Munster game a year, I don't think people would be happy with that.
One, and now it leads us on to one Edinburgh-Glasgow game a year. So based on this model, there would have been only one, if you have the conference system of playing somebody in the other conference only once, Edinburgh and Glasgow would only play once. Because they want to maintain the structure of derbies and keep bums on seats, well, they maintained the structure that Edinburgh and Glasgow played twice. But the problem is they came up against this issue of numbers. Because
scheduling errors and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Needs match up.
Yeah. So in this new model... Ulster plays the three other Irish provinces twice, which actually leaves then Edinburgh and Glasgow at a loose end for one weekend. So they play again.
It's the same with the Italian teams, the same with the South African teams.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think you were saying yourself that it actually, I mean, I'd be a cynic about it. I'd be like, well, does that not mean that if you're Benetton and Treviso, if Benetton and, sorry, Zebre, Benetton versus Zebre, you have, that's kind of the gimme few points, or Cheetahs versus Southern Kings, you're playing them three times when people in your same conference are only playing them once, that's a gimme few points. I mean, I'd be a bit of a cynic about it, but I know you were talking about how you can turn it into an event like this.
Yeah, so that's the thing. So I think from this season alone, I mean, the starts that both the Italian teams have had, it's definitely improving. I mean, it's giving them a couple of extra points. Maybe you're giving them a bit of extra chance to perhaps get into the playoffs or whatever. That's positive. But I think the one thing that I think the people that should be the biggest advocate of this is essentially now you have a test series for the 1872 Cup.
Yes.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, the best of three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Glasgow definitely benefited, well, not benefited, but they definitely thrived in the league system last year. They were probably, they were the highest wins of any team in the league. They won the league part of it last year and they're in the playoffs. But at the same time, you had Edinburgh who actually won the 1872 Cup.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the interesting thing, isn't it? That even when Glasgow were riding high, and let's say that they're riding low at the minute. I mean, they could well win the Pro 14 this year. Mm. But when they were winning and were probably better than Leinster, they were still being beaten by Edinburgh from time to time in these derbies.
I mean, you don't have to get me wrong. Like, I always remember Edinburgh being... probably Edinburgh fans wouldn't like me using the term, but they were the Leinster's bogey team whenever we'd face them in the Champions Cup or the Huntington Cup as it was, but and it is now again. That's the thing. So I think it is interesting to see, and I think you could probably look at the cohesiveness maybe of Edinburgh, because maybe they wouldn't have had as many of the Scottish players. So you could have had that cohesion, consistent playing week in, week out, in the same way that you'd. Yeah, you'd see the chemistry being there. I wouldn't like to say it's like Connacht beating Leinster, but you'd have the rivalry there.
Yeah,
and it's an interesting approach.
I was going to go in the other direction, though. I think because in a game like that, I suppose, Glasgow-Edinburgh, no matter where they play, Glasgow's going to be favourites. And what's interesting to sort of come back to what we were saying about home advantage is upsetting the apple cart, is that kind of one of the points is sort of missed. Sorry, I gave the long psychological explanation about how the home player's testosterone is up. So does that mean that's where home advantage comes from? No, it just means that their testosterone is up and they're going to probably play better. But there's a big question mark about home advantage, about whether or not it's just this self-perpetuating thing.
True.
So we have, if you have a situation where everybody assumes home advantage and rests their players, because when they're going away, this kind of French model, when you go yep. away, you expect to lose. And so therefore, you basically plan to fail.
Yeah, but at the same, okay, like I suppose we're going to be coming at this from two different angles. If you're expecting you're not going to win, why potentially injure your top players when you want to ensure every home game is a win, and then you'll target certain away games? I mean, this is being very cynical and looking at a strategic point of view. And okay, fine, I get the fans may not be overwhelmed by this idea, or like overwhelmingly for this idea, but at the same time, you do have to appreciate this is, at the end of the day, you want to be in contention at the end of the season. You're not going to risk Johnny at an away game in Newport against Dragons. Like, you're not going to.
Well, I think the Johnny example, Leinster didn't use Johnny Sexton in an away game against Scarlets because they assumed, obviously, you're against the second best team in the league. They'll win that, you assume, because they've got home advantage.
Yeah.
But had they actually sent Johnny Sexton, they would have won quite well.
Well.
I mean, was it 13-12 in the end?
It was close. But I think it's just, it's, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily a bad thing. And I know I keep on coming back and trying to defend these points.
It's not to say it's a bad
points.
Thing. It's just to say that people can get trapped into assuming it's a fact.
Well, that's true.
In fact, it's perhaps a constructed situation.
Well, you know? I think as soon as the team starts resting players at home because they think, oh, well, we're definitely going to win this, I think that's where it starts to become interesting.
Well, in terms of that kind of approach, which is a more nervous approach, which
that's
is
just collusion, match fixing. So we can't get into that.
Yeah, well, you've got better, you've more control over your players and events, like the basic events you were talking about, like your supporters, like your supporters calling for the TMO and all these things. So perhaps it's better to rely on them rather than throw everything you have in an away game that you barely lose.
Yeah, true. I think even from the perspective of familiarity and being in a familiar situation in terms of your surroundings, it is quite handy that, for instance, we were at the Leinster game this past weekend. James Ryan and Dan Levy both went down. Mm. So to have the familiarity that they just go into the set system and they have to do what they have to do, and we know where, like, all their normal doctors are around. For instance, there was a player that went down in the Scarlets game. In Scarlets, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
But as soon as you're an away team, if you have to get any pain relief, such as injections or even tablets, I think, it has to be administered by the home team because the away doctor wouldn't be allowed to do that.
And pity there's no rugby in Spain. You'd want to get injured in Spain in that situation, wouldn't you? Definitely.
Absolutely.
But I absolutely take that on board. I suppose you just need to separate out what are all causes that are good for you to have at home, and what is you just accepting home advantage as a mythical reality. It's a bit like people, there's this thing in the stock market where where prices, some people believe the prices are based around the Fibonacci sequence of numbers.
Nutters are very active.
But you can make money betting on the nutters. You can make money betting on the superstition. And
that's true.
Simply with rugby, you're kind of doing the same thing. You're betting on that the superstition will hold, even though you're kind of part of constructing that superstition.
Well, to quote The Big Short, people don't like to think that bad things happen. So I think it is definitely the case that you'll have people start to buy into that, and then I think that will over perpetuate itself. There has often been the comparison between Pro 14 and the other leagues in Europe, and I think at the moment definitely being compared to the top 14. But the win percentages of home teams is similar. But if you look at the English Premiership, you have 61% of home teams win. In the, as I was saying, the top 14, pro 14, it's around 75.
Mm.
So there definitely is that discrepancy there. But I think there's more of a move towards, whether that's a reflection of the English Premiership not being looking after its players enough, or maybe they're overworking, and maybe they're trying too much for the TV money. I think it'll be an interesting one to see. But I think that
Do you think Leinster should rest some players in Connacht, or do you think Ulster are going to Thomond Park? Do you think Ulster should rest some players, just accept a home advantage and be done with it?
Well,
not to put you on the spot.
I don't know.
I was actually more of a roundabout way of asking, what do you think the results will be at the weekend?
Well, I think Leinster have the potential to go over and win in sports grounds, but at the same time, Connacht looked very convincing against Scarlets.
They did.
Very convincing.
Yeah. They certainly believe in home advantage. And they just need the Leinster players to believe it too, and they'll get there.
I mean,
they were there at the end of last season. Yeah, what was it, 47?
57-0.
900-2 something, whatever it was.
I mean, John Muldoon's final conversion. I think that probably might be still under the skin of some of the guys.
Were quite angry about that. So I wonder if there's any of that bitterness still stewing inside them. Potentially there is.
I mean, Connacht might have gotten very lucky in that sense, and there may be the next version of the Leinster-Munster rivalry because of that now.
That would be great news for Connacht.
Exactly.
Speaking of Munster, Ulster are now the unbeaten team in the competition.
And
it would not be a headline if they beat Munster.
It wouldn't be. And this is the thing that I think I wanted to bring up from the beginning of the... from as soon as Les Kiss left Ulster last season. Ulster are a good side. There's the scandal around them last year that's well known, well documented. But I think they were only missing one or two pieces. John Cooney was their saviour last year. And I think they're...
And they've only got better since.
Better since. And there's more consistency now there. And as soon as McFarlane came in, he only came in briefly before the season actually started. So I think they definitely had a solid base to build from there. And they have ex-Irish players. Darren Cave, as you said, he's ex-Irish international.
Well, Geordie Murphy obviously is the big
Yeah, new addition there. And then you have Stockdale having the breakout season last year. They have fantastic pieces.
Yes, and they've got a bit more money, I'd imagine, when the contracts and the other two guys have expired. Not budgeted for. They have that money to spend. Yeah. And Cooney's fit in incredibly well.
Incredibly well. And he's probably the shining beacon. I mean, if you're a Leinster player or a Connacht player or a Munster player on the fringe, it was an extra option. But now they're even at the point where they don't need pity or anything like that. I couldn't get why there was this, like, kind of no one wanted to be taking over the head coaching role in Ulster.
Well, there's a few other, like, controversies. I suppose John Cooney stayed this ship, but Rune Pienaar leaving was also left a bitter taste in lots of people's mouths. Like, leaving aside all the other things that happened. And then the fact that Les Kiss was let go, a lot of people questioned, well, I mean, what a strange time to let him go. Or is there some suggestion he was implicated in the allegations against the players? No. So who can win in the position he was in with every number 10? Yet he was let go. So if you're a manager being offered this, it does seem like a bit of a poison chalice. But you're right, all the basics are there.
On the PR side of it, that was a poison chalice. But I think now you're going to be... reaping all their rewards.
And
it's Holy Grail now.
Absolutely. Poison Chalice becomes Holy Grail. And you'll only get positive words said about you because the only way is up. I mean, people kind of forget that the season didn't end too badly last year.
No, they're still in the Champions Cup.
Yes, exactly. But the accepted line is it was a disaster last year. So right now they are playing a stormer.
Exactly. No. Well, as a Leinster fan and probably as a loud man myself, I'm going to give it to Ulster. I think Ulster could pull it off this week. I mean, where is the game being played?
As far as I'm aware, it's the Thomond,
Okay, I mean, that's going to be a bit...
home advantage.
Yeah, and I mean, more so than Munster had before, Thomond is actually home advantage. When they were playing against Ospreys, that was actually in Cork. So that was Musgrave. I think Thomond is an actual home field advantage.
The other teams, including the Irish teams, will be up for the Welsh teams anyway will be up for their derbies the weekend after.
Yeah.
I mean, all to be revealed now this weekend. I think it's clear to say that in terms of the derbies, if Ulster beat Munster, Ulster are going to have a great season.
Yeah.
If Connacht beat Leinster, Connacht are going to have a great season. That's all we know.
Let's hope it writes Munster off though. Okay, I think that's it for this week, guys. Get watching the rugby and let's all enjoy it. Talk to you next week.
John Barkley comes up to receive the trophy. This, for the Scarlets fans, is simply great to watch.
They were outplayed in the first half by a huge side that picked and win.
The 1872 Cup back in Edinburgh hands. They've beaten Glasgow.
The first team in 17 attempts to come to Dublin and get a win. How good is that for you?
Oh, it's great.
All I'm getting at the moment are players shouting, knock on, offside, tackle without the ball. We're in the wrong sport for that.
The Zeebo special gets it wide to Earls. And Earls from here means only one thing.
The best stadium I've ever played in, the best atmosphere, the best supporters. Hopefully one day I'll be back.
Should of course apologise to any Munster fans listening. They'll have something to say about whether Leinster are going to be in the final as the Scarlets come again. Oh, brilliant offload. It's Brady with a stroll in under the sticks.
Oh, look, it's been a roller coaster here all my life. 47-10, Jesus. I thought I was in dreamland when we won the Pro 12. Phenomenal.